At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
It's the Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by Pete, Steve and not Paddy. Paddy's doing gymnastics. That's genuinely, that's not a joke. He's in gymnastics. What do you see with Pat?
Just likes leotards, I think.
I know, but in these all these odd things he does, like this bodybuilding, see, online.
That's not really odd, is it, to be honest?
Well, bodybuilding?
It's not bodybuilding, is it?
He just goes to the gym, which most people do, if I'm honest.
Bodybuilding? No, and his bodybuilding is like his 80s, you know, leotard, and now he's doing gymnastics. That's what he's been heading towards, gymnastics in a leotard, jumping around with a hairband on, you know, and leg warmers like the 80s. What's that now? I mean, for a hero, that film.
Flash Dance.
Yes, that's it. Flash Dance, that's it. Yeah.
Anyway, right. Straight to the stocks.
Yeah, I've got to explain. First of all, we're recording this on Thursday evening, because I'm unavailable this weekend, because I'm going camping! Again, the wife is there. I've had 4 calls already. Last night, I took them down there, got the tent set up, 2 tents for my wife, the kids, their 2 cousins, and my mother-in-law. And I did the barbecue and all that, and I left. And tonight, I've had 3 phone calls already. Just, Mum doesn't know what she's doing on the barbecue. It's literally gone out. She's been blowing it, and there's all ash now over the burgers.
And then, there's ash all over the burgers?
I think she put the food on too quickly. I admit this. But you got to let the flames go down, but then let the coals go white, you know? Because if you put on too quickly, all the fat, whatever, goes off and just, you know, puts it out. And she did the same again just now. They did the same. She's blowing the thing, all the ash from all over the bar. I said, no, take those off. She's sure you do it last night. I said, yeah, but take the food off first before you start blowing, because it's not good, is it? And then she said, she could call me back again now, just now, before I came on. That's why I was a bit late. And she said, right, put the chicken on. She put the lid on. I said, don't put the lid on. I said, you know, a fire needs 3 elements. What are they? She said, we haven't time for that. So they would need, you need a fuel, ignition temperature, and oxygen. You put the lid on a barbecue outside, just go out. You haven't got enough oxygen. She said, well, I saw Justin's that last night. She said, yes, after the sausages were cooked. I put them on because we did all that.
This new format of keeping the nonsense to the end of the podcast is working well, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I just want to point out why we're doing on a Thursday, and it's relevant, okay? Listen, I took delivery today. So here we go, on the stocks, ladies and gentlemen. Chapter 1. If you skip the DVD to now, chapter 1, Christopher Mayer's 100 Baggers, stocks that return 101 and how to find them. Now, he says at the start, he says, it sounds ridiculous, it sounds like a big ramp, but this is based off 365 stocks they found that have been 100 baggers. So they said, right, is there a trait that these stocks, you know, conform to? And we'll search that out. And essentially, the first thing they say at the start there, right, is main thrust of the conversation is buy right and hold on. And like, so we talked about this before, didn't we? So, you know, generally, I think about 25 years, 100 bagger, but that will pay. You know, the other day I said we had a one bag in Gfinity, and I said it transformed your portfolio, didn't it? Right? You imagine having a 100 bagger. And he said, it's not only that, it's not about finding a 100 bagger. It's about basically getting more than, you know, your average return, but it's by holding on. And so, okay, so let's say you don't capture the bottom to the top, but you get in between that. And even if you get a 10 bagger, a 10 bagger will transform your portfolio if you hold on to it.
What's the biggest bagger you've had and you've actually, you know, you're out of it now, like you banked that profit? Because I've had ones. I mean, I think back to Asia Met when we first got in there. That did 10 bag in terms of price. But actually what I've actually, well, I'm still in it, but what I would have got, what I got out of it in terms of profit, you know, it's respectable. It's probably 4 bags or something, but it's not a 10 bag, even though I was in it from bottom, not well, bottom-ish to top-ish. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you want to go up, you want to go down. So that, I wonder how many people actually would get 100.
Yeah, it's only classed as like a 10 bag or a 100 bagger. You cash in at that point, isn't it?
The stock itself, let's be honest, he draws up criteria here, and he says he makes the lower end cutoff at 50 million market cap in dollars, okay? So that's what about 30 million UK?
The
lower end. So they don't even count anything that's started below that. So what's that, like 30 million pounds, yeah? So essentially, they are looking at companies that sustain the rise. That's why I've been talking a lot, haven't I, of late, recently, about my filter system, and you have to have some kind of system, and I've learned from this. So Asia Met, I did about, I took half my money out, didn't I? But I put my money in, but I did do 10 bags, and I did cash out.
Yeah.
And I did it with the EVRH, I did it with Visarian. But I realised they had the hype around them, those stocks, but they didn't have the sustainability. Now, if you look at the stocks only now, I've been a bit obsessed with my filter. And it's not that. I've been trying to hone this filter in because it works. And I realise all I need to do is find these stocks and they have to be sustainable and hold on to them. You can't have a 100 bagger with a stock like it's a resource stock and not going to be generating cash in the next 3-4 years. It's not going to happen because it'll go pop and drop about 10-20 times. If you're lucky, one of those pops will be 10 bags, which they were Asia Met. There's a fever pitch around it, and also EVRH and Visarian. You know, they've all done that because they've had the hype around it, but then they won't last for long. If they're not something to throw off cash that can justify that valuation, they'll just drop. And so that's why on my filter here, I always look at, I said, when I look, a while back when I started doing that series of videos, 10 lessons I've learned, I realised that most of the companies that did the best over the year, in the looked at the last 3 years in the UK stocks, were below. There's a 75% chance. I looked at 100 stocks. 75% of those stocks, the best performance of the year, started below a 30 million market cap. Now, it's not a case of going all the way down below, say, 5 million, because a lot of those stocks will never be generating revenue for a long time. So they may pop and drop. Good for traders, not good for investors. So that's why on the filter, you know, you also have to look for a date when they're generating some revenue, because then that becomes sustainable rise. And so there's one there where this guy said he's a good couple of emails in the book he's had from readers, and he's updated the book, and he said this one guy who's traded around all his life, and then all of a sudden he just held on to a stock, and it did like 150 bags over like 30 years, and he thought, do you know what? I wish I'd known that earlier, and because...
Well, he didn't sell any of it.
No, he did. I think he sold a bit of it, but it's stuff like they bought Xerox. And Amazon, for example, a recent example of that. There's not a lot of people who held that stock, but when you see a company's trajectory, and essentially it's like, if the reason why you bought in hasn't changed, ignore the price, you know. He gives a great anecdote about Warren Buffett, and he said, let's say someone come to you in 1972, said, "Oh, this, you want to invest in this guy Warren Buffett's company? It's done me brilliantly." And so, you know, you look back at the track record, and they said, "Oh, yeah, it's done about 50% in the last year or so." So, say you invest there at $38 it was a share. I'll just get the prices right. Let's say you invested after your mate's advice in Warren Buffett's, you know, Berkshire Hathaway, and that was 1972. It went from $8. In 1962 to $80 at the end of 1972. So that's a 10 bag in a 10-year period.
Yeah,
that's quite impressive. So say you invested then, bought the stock at $80, on December 31st, 1972. 3 years later, on December 31st, 1975, it had been $38. So more than halved. A 53% drop, and you would have thought, right, I'm going to sell that. My mate's an idiot, right? So if it sold there, right, never spoken to your friend again. Over the next year, it rose to $38 to $94. By December 31st, 1982, it was $775, and on its way to $223,000 today. So if the business is underneath it performing, ignore the shakeup in the market.
That is relatively exceptional, though, that example.
Well, no, there's 365 companies that have done 100 bags or more. And so these companies, not just
got a time frame of 26 years, isn't it?
Yeah. Some of them, one of them done in 10 years. But what I'm saying is, even if you get a tenth of that, a 10 bag that's sustainable, that'll transform your portfolio. So this book is like a system of trying to find these stocks. But on the way, you may not find 100 bagger, but you'll find quality stocks that are likely to rise and be sustainable. You know, so, and that's why I got that filter. You know, and you've got to have some kind of. And have you noticed recently? I've been obsessed with companies that got IP, and Warren Buffett's always said this about a moat, and I realise why that is. And I'm obsessed now with companies that have intellectual property that's proprietary. They own it, and it gives them a barrier to entry, and they haven't got competitors, and that means they get bigger margins, and that means they can earn more money and put more cash back into the company or pay dividends or whatever, and that's very important. And do you know what? In the last few weeks or months that I've been looking at this, I bought after on the podcast Symphony Environmental because they're IP, and I thought it's the right time. They have FDA approval. It's there. Gfinity, for example, they are quite unique in this country. They've got that race control IP. It's not a strong IP, but they are the market leader in this area, and it's the theme of that is massive. And that's another filter there. Is the sector hot? Is the end market big? Commercial? It's got to be commercial. It's got to be you be able to sell whatever they're producing and growing. And look, Gfinity bagged. I bought Symphony Environmental, but it was 78% in one day. It didn't sell anything. I'm going to hold on, so I think it's going to be a good business.
But this is the thing with all this bagging, and even if you de-risk, so you set your bags and you sell half, so you're getting the money back that you put in. So you've just then got a bunch of free shares, effectively. And then, it comes down, it goes up, but whatever. Based on what you're talking about with your examples of the 100 baggers, it's having that discipline or belief. If the story hasn't changed, just to hold on to that bunch of free shares, because yes, it might dip down. It might. So Gfinity is a good example. So we de-risked, came back down. It's up and down at the moment, but there is a lot of potential for the future. Having that discipline of going, hold on, but this is kind of, it's all profit, and seeing profit starting to disappear, the temptation is to, let's sell it and.
I'm going to stop you there, Pete. I'm very good at holding on to a stock, probably a little bit too
long. Yes, good point.
Yeah, but you know what, Steve, that's good, though. Example. But the thing is, Steve, you've been holding the wrong stocks. That's the trouble.
Yeah.
And there are such things in this book. We're not just saying buy and hold and forget about it. You've got to keep an eye on it, see if the story changed or whatever, and then you get out if it has, or if something's gone completely wrong, that's changed the story. And it's excellent the way the market is trained and set up, and even from Wall Street and all that down, it's designed to make you want to chop and change and sell, because they earn commission from selling. There's quarterly earnings, so you get to change your mind every quarter, pretty much. For America, and he said, it shouldn't be like that. You shouldn't, if the business is still doing okay, ignore the share price. And he said there. One of the things, almost, it's part of my thoughts. Recently I've been saying I've been wasting my time worrying by looking at the indices and looking at whether, a bear market is coming. In this book, he said, the guy, this is a copy of another book, or it's an extension of another, the original book from this guy, Phelps. And he said, Phelps also stands against market timing. He told me about how he predicted various bear markets in his career, yet I would have been much better off if instead of correctly forecasting a bear market, I'd focus my attention through the decline on finding stocks that would turn, $10,000 into $1 million, because then you just bought more of them at the decent businesses. And that's the thing. I focused too much on the macro recently, and when I've gone back to now focusing on small caps, I've done really well recently. I've literally gone to a portfolio high. So, listen, focus on what you know, stay with it. I like this quote here. It says, basically, you know, humans, we've always said this, it's hard for humans to do nothing. I find it very hard to go on holidays and sit down doing nothing because I'm not planning. But he said, this Phelps, the original writer of the original book, this was extended from, said, he said, let's face it, a great deal of investing is on par with the instinct that makes a fish bite on an inedible spinner just because it's moving. You know, people can't sit there and do nothing. They have to, oh, that's moving, I'll jump on that. Oh, that's moving. You know, rather than look at the value and how the business is doing and where it's going and where it's likely to go in like 5 years, they're thinking, what's going to happen in the next 5 days or a month, you know, so a week. So it's almost like shifting your thoughts from weeks, not only to months,
also,
to years.
I also think the macro picture now is so uncertain that I'm actually far more interested. I've gone back now to being completely interested in just micro stocks and having a small number. I don't want too many in my portfolio. Keep a large chunk of cash just because you just don't know where the world's going, let alone the markets. And focus on those where you can get these incredible rises and you can make some money. It then comes down to that thing of when you take profit. And that's the hardest thing of like, I mean, you know, it's better than having a loss, but at the same time, it's almost more gutting to see a profit disappear.
Yeah, but it is more gutting to see a profit, but we've got to focus on companies now that are starting to generate value, and that the values, any proper values, only generated via cash creation, pretty much. It's not via news of potential valuation generation in the future, because that's what the microcap area is all about, pretty much pre-revenue or loss-making stocks that release news about the promise of generating value, and then the stock rises on that, comes back down. The reason why it comes back down, because it's not a value-generating news. It's just the potential of it. So it's adjusting. It's hold. Steve's buy and hold is good, but he's been buying and holding the wrong stocks.
We've all done that.
But now, Steve, I mean, the majority of stocks you're in are going to be sort of decent businesses, I think, you know, and you just have a bit of patience. Like, I mean, I get an example, Salt Lake Potash, I think could be close on 100 bag. If you do the maths anyway, you can make a route to 50 bag, pretty much, if they get the Nine Lakes up and running. Right, and when you're generating that kind of value and cash flow anyway, other opportunities happen. And those guys are very ambitious, and they could start doing new projects anyway, or they could be bought out for like that. So that's the kind of thing where you just got to have patience, you know? And people start worrying about...
just needs that debt funding. I've got to feel that debt funding news, if that comes through and that's being sorted out, secured, you've got to think that that will spike.
I don't see it. Have you seen... I tweeted today, Tony Sirichik on Twitter, and he's... You know, that's happening. That is happening. Yeah. I mean, it's all constructed. You know, it's up and running pretty much in Lake Way. It's going ahead. The debt. He did say he's not a BSer. He's not. You know, he's done it before. And he said he did say to me once, the finance guys, it takes so long. It's so annoying. He said, if they had to do what I do, they wouldn't get the project off the ground. They just get it done. You know. He said we are building it. Whether they like it or not, it's happening. And so he said, it's going ahead. We're in Q1. We're producing. He said, we've created the Lake Way Village. We've done all the ponds pretty much. We need some more money just to get things. But we'll get there, whatever happens. And so, you know, he's got that attitude. It's going to happen. And I feel it's close. I also feel Polarian, you know. We have to have patience there. It's generating some revenue, still loss making, of course, because I know they're about a year away from FDA approval. Maybe even quicker, you never know. But that could happen. Because again, IP, it's got IP, you know, it's protected. It's a barrier to entry from the competitors. No one can just jump into that space and take over from them and all that stuff. So I like it. Do you know what? I'm going to talk about... So a while back, I had Dr. Tom Oakley, who's the CEO of Feedback, on the show.
Yeah.
And I've been burned by Feedback before. Because the previous board always promised. I quite liked the small cap meta, but I didn't really look into it that well. And I haven't been as, I'm trying to be as refined as possible on my, or, you know, trying to stick to my rules as far as I can. There's got to be a little bit of flexibility there. But, so I had him on, Tom, and now they've launched Bleeper, which is a medical imaging sort of app for the NHS. And I thought, well, okay. And some other people said to me before, again, you know, I didn't really look into it. And And I just thought, no, I've just been tarnished by the previous board. And I thought, I can't be bothered. But I listened to him. I quite liked him. I liked him. I liked the interview. I thought, I like that guy. He's from the NHS. He's a doctor. He knows what he's all, you know, he knows the... He would be the kind of customer or the person, the client, or the person who would be using that app. So he's designed it with him in mind and his client and his colleagues in mind. So he knows exactly what the need is in the NHS. And so they said there are apps out there that do messaging with imaging. He said, everything is based around imaging in hospitals, pretty much. You look at images before you make invasive surgery because invasive surgery takes time, takes a lot of money. So you look at images. But they said there wasn't... a CE, or you know, a medical grade sort of because you have to. It's a medical device, and the medical device directive means you have to, you know, adhere to certain sort of regulatory approvals and stuff. So, Bleeper, which is their medical imaging messaging service or app, has now got CE mark on it. It's the only one of its kind. And directors say they believe Bleeper is the only communication platform to address the UK market that has met MDD certification requirements. That's a big thing because when you're working with health. And people's lives, you have to adhere to regulatory. The only competitor out there, pretty much, is messaging service they use. They take a picture of the screen or computer screen, and share that. Yeah. He said the one we got. In fact, they're in the packs. They are in the medical imaging library business anyway. That was feedback beforehand. That's the older model. We already have those. So what this does is bring up top quality scans and all that from the NHS library, and you can scan, talk about it, annotate it, and send it off, message to each other. But so they had this CE mark. So first and foremost, that there. I'm looking at my filter, right? First of all, size. Is the market cap below 30? Yes. This was. What, 10 million? And so that fits that. And the chart was going down as well, the chart. I liked him a lot. I had Vadim then, Alexander, head of healthcare, SP Angel, come on. And I said to him, I want you on every week. He said, what stuff I talk about? Is there anything? And he started covering stocks that they were covering, the broker was covering SP Angel. I said, what do you hold? Do you hold any stocks? He said, yeah, I hold stocks. I said, what, medical stocks, medtech? He said, yeah. I said, well, talk about some of those. I prefer to hear about what you hold. You're a guy who lives this stuff all the time. He said, okay. So you came on first week, but a week after, a week before Dr. Tom came on, he talked about feedback. He said, I really like feedback. I thought, right, okay, that's two people now. So talk about feedback. And these are guys, there's a doctor and a guy who's head healthcare. Med tech is massive. So I thought, right, is the sector hot, end market, big, commercial and growing? Of course, there's only patients. NHS is massive. And I thought, does it have IP? Is it scalable? It's a 10 million market cap. The IP is there. Of course it is. Proprietary. Intellectual property. Mm-hmm. It's all there. And then Richard from Vox said to me, I'm going to give feedback a call. Get a bit of feedback from them, from the podcast. Because they're not a client. They just came on. We give them a podcast as the new sort of feedback. Because we've had them on before as the previous board. And see if they like Vox and what we can do for them, all that stuff. He said, can you give me any feedback? And I said, I really like them, actually. I've been reading about it. I looked at their fundraise. They raised 5 million. And I looked at who they raised it with. Pretty much all institutions. Now, they were like a 5 million market cap. They raised 5 million. When that happens, right, it's not much of a discount. Like the 9% it was discount. When that happens, something's going on. I thought, what is going on here? And so that's why I got really excited about them. The last, weekend, last time. But I was telling you about them. Guys, the more I read about this, the more I like it. And so I bought some stock, but I couldn't buy hardly any. It's like it was tightened up, and then they released that news on Thursday, which is I tried to buy some. They came out. I've been trying to buy some all week. Can't hardly buy any, but it came out. And Bleeper was the news. Bleeper appointed to major NHS X framework. Basically, it's been approved by NHS, and now they can roll it out. They're the only company in this thing. And you see by the Dr. Tom Oakley's sort of. In a statement here, Bleeper has set a new standard for medical communication tools. I'm delighted that Bleeper has been awarded a place on the NHS X Clinical Communication Tool Framework, which positions Bleeper in the vanguard of medical imaging communications and provides a vehicle for potential reimbursement while simultaneously making Bleeper available to the whole of the NHS. Yep. So they are, now this to me this is very significant. And could this be a ten bagger? Yes, it could. They're like, they've risen 100% on that news and come back to about 40%. But I just think, they're still only valued at about 17 million. And I think if they become the go-to imaging message platform for NHS, that's, 17 million is nothing, is it? It's like ridiculous. It's a ridiculous valuation.
Well, based on the news on Thursday, it's 3 million £3 million, basically, isn't it? It's £3 million.
Yeah, that's not that's not the revenue. That's
no, that's not the revenue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that, well, what is it then? It's the fund that.
Yeah. So now, basically, I don't know much for the NHS. When you become on the approved list of people who supply a supplier, a trusted supplier, the NHS, you, like for example, apps and digital stuff, they are on this NCCT framework now.
Yes.
Provides NHS Trust to buy Bleeper by drawing down £3 million from centralised fund over a 2-year period. So they can start buying this. I mean, I would like
to. So it's up to the authorities to make the decision whether they want to buy it.
Yes. Yeah,
but and then draw down from that money to buy it.
Basically. Yeah, but they've been going through tests, though, with NHS, you know, some NHS Trusts already. So they've also helped them in COVID. And he said, we've had it. And I asked on the podcast, what's the feedback been like? And he said, well, it's been very good. And so we'll see whether, you know, it's going to happen. I mean, it's not a signed deal.
It's a good leap forward, isn't it? It's an endorsement that obviously NHS say, yes, it's good enough or whatever to be part of our framework.
Yeah, if we scroll back and think, okay, well, would they have got this if the studies, the case studies they've been doing live, you know, in-field work with the ZAP hadn't worked out? No, it must have worked out very well, and they must be keen now to roll it out. And I said, but it's not only that. He said, it's also a stamp of approval that the company can use also use this to drive sales in other markets. So, and they're looking at other, not only medical, but other things. Anything that needs, you know, high regulation with imaging and all that stuff. And I suppose, you know, you could go anywhere around the world with this. But I think it's one of the things. And it's almost like, you know, it makes sense when you have this kind of a filter where you look at companies that have, you know, a point of difference, a barrier to entry from other companies. It just makes sense, doesn't it? You know? It just makes a lot of sense. But Pete, you didn't buy any, you know?
The story is, so we're speaking on Thursday, obviously. I just had an incredibly busy day today.
Listened to the podcast, Steve, did you, apart from getting the ticker, what other, because I did on our WhatsApp group, I posted quite a links to the podcast, I posted the links to RNSs, I posted a quote from Tom and a couple of things, and how much actual research did you do before you bought, Steve?
Absolutely zero.
There we are. And Pete actually listened to the podcast. Yeah. But you listened to this, was it Thursday morning? Was it Wednesday or whatever?
Yeah, Wednesday night, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And
so the timing is unfortunate because the podcast was recorded a month ago.
Yeah, and so. I know, but do you know what? It's one of those things that comes to your mind, isn't it, when you think, okay, what's. I've been searching for small cap stocks with IP, proprietary IP, you know? And then Vadim came on and spoke about this. Tom came on. Then Richard from Vox said, I want to go back to them. You got any feedback from your end? And I said, let me just look into it. I just looked through the audio and I started reading more of the stuff. Listen to the podcast. I listened to Vadim's podcast. I thought, this fits my filter perfectly. I'd been tarnished by the last previous board. And, you know, that's why I didn't actually... I probably would have bought some off the back of the podcast a month ago. But I, you know...
Yeah. But the situation...
It'll come back, though. No, there's no guarantee they'll earn, you know, tons of revenue from it. It'll always come back. You know, you get news, go up, it'll come back a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'll probably buy some more. And
A couple of things, really. The timing is one thing, because it was a month ago that the podcast... There was then this a rise in the price this week, which is why I didn't buy immediately, because I've been stung before where you go, why are you rising? Because there's no actual news. But then you could suggest that there might have been loose lips and people knew something. There might have been rumour going on. Who knows?
Yeah.
But and that was a reason for a price rise. But equally, I've seen that where there's a price rise and you think, oh, there might be a rumour. It turns out to be nothing. And so you buy then and it just drops down again the following week and you're just out of pocket for, you know, another 3 months, 6 months until any news breaks.
And then you end up deadheading it.
right, because no news is broken and the potential hasn't happened.
Yeah.
In this instance... I mean, okay, the news literally broke within like 24 hours of us listening to the podcast that was recorded a month ago. So it's a bit bizarre, but there we go.
And then, and normally that's quite a fast decision. Tom did mention about, I asked him about 3-6 months timelines and what he's hoping to get. And I'm sure, you know, he said in a couple of months we should have news on this. But I mean, that's odd how it's happened. That's quite quick for the NHS to come back. But that placing was impressive. The holdings are impressive. It's like... You realise that these institutions are coming on board for a reason there, and
I'm also a bit kind of surprised at quite how big a spike, and that sort of like has.
I think
you read the RNS really, because hold on, It's like, yes, there's potential, but, and it, yes, it's a good massive step for the company. It's awesome, isn't it? But that's why it's gone up to, it went over 100% in the, within 10 minutes or something, and it's come back to 40% up at close or whatever. Where's it going to go from here? Like you say, the temptation is to buy tomorrow morning, but I'm kind of going, no, hold on, calm down.
I mean, the thing is, there was literally no stock to buy, you know? I mean, I've been trying for it's hard to buy stock because it's all held by institutions. They're a small cap company. A lot of it's held by institutions. Yeah. And,
it'll probably tent bag tomorrow.
Yeah, but no, exactly. I'll be watching. But if it comes down and there's stock available, I'll buy some, you know, because I couldn't get what I wanted.
To be fair, I found it quite hard to buy it today because I put in the amount I wanted to buy and it wouldn't let me buy.
Yeah, but you're worth billions of pounds, Steve.
Yeah. And to be fair, because I was bringing it, I kept reducing the amount. And then I think that was the point, because I was still unsure whether to buy it. It was exactly the same reason what Pete just said then. But as soon as I realised it was quite hard to get stock, I was like, oh, actually, yeah, do you know what? I'll get some. I just got the max I could.
Yeah.
We've all bought stocks that have risen like the last couple of days. Yeah. And then it just drops back and you're like, yeah, that was a silly buy. You know, in this instance, it just went gangbusters. But there we are.
Yeah, we'll see. There may be that spike and drop off. We may see some sellers there, you know? So,
surely that's what happened today when it kind of peaked.
Yeah, sometimes you see after hours, so they didn't see any big sellers. I saw, look at this. One, someone bought, I'm looking on London Stock Exchange here, someone bought at 618, what, 12 grand at 172. That was one of the 170, their buys, 10 grand there. So some big, you know, not.
The mad thing is people, for it to be, you know, go 100% and people are buying at that level. I mean,
to a certain extent, I understand that, though, because when you're talking about, you know, it was like, you know, start of the week, it was like 10 million market cap. It was 5 million in cash. They just raised 5 million. So this is valid. It's, you know, MedTech, they potentially the leader in an app that's going to be used by the NHS. To me, and the price was at pretty much the placing price. Mm. You know, even though you couldn't buy a lot of stock, the place was at the price. And so even though it rose by 40%, it's like, so what, though? It's still, it's sub 20 million market cap.
Yeah,
if you're talking about a company that's going to go up, I'd let it settle down, like always. Give it 3 days, see what happens. 3-day rule.
Equally, it's tempted to kind of start the scaling in now.
Yeah.
Because you don't know where it's going to go tomorrow morning.
Yeah, and also you can't buy any. It's annoying. I gave up after a while, but I'm trying to buy some more on that rise. When it came down, I thought that was a big seller. I'm going to buy up some of that sold stock. Couldn't get a quote on anything. Literally, you know, when I went under a grand and I couldn't get a quote on it. No point in that. So no point in that, is it? No point in grand. You've got a big lump in, didn't you? You know?
Yeah. But I'm sure there are lots of people listening to this that will relate to my situation where you're busy, you've got a job, you know, so you're happy to have a job. Yeah, that's
what were you actually doing?
Yeah, I was on a Zoom call for about 4 hours with a whole bunch of different people, and I was in charge of it, so, you know, I couldn't really be
Did they have their clothes on?
Just say to them, hang on a second, I'm going to make some stock!
Yeah, right.
What were you talking about? SEO or something? What are you talking about?
Yeah, no, it was onboarding a new client, and it was like...
Exactly, was just say, sorry, I'm in the stocks.
Eight people, five different nationalities. It was quite hard work, you know, quite a lot of accents. You need a lot of concentration, so the phone's off, everything else is off, I've got to concentrate on this. And then I turn my phone back on, and, oh, right, I've just missed a 10-bagger. No, I missed a bagger.
But very odd time, though, as well, to release news, wasn't it? Thursday, literally, about 10 minutes before close of bell, or whatever it was. And it was very odd, but never mind.
Well, maybe that's just when the news came in.
Yeah, but I thought at least another couple of weeks, you know, and quietly topped up. But then there we are. Marv's feedback. Anything else, guys? No, I got a feeling that you know, Salt Lake Potash, it's got to be around the corner. We are the end of July now. It's going to be the end of June. But I remember Tony is venting his frustration at the finance guys dragging their feet. But I think it's getting closer. Anything else I like? I talked about Clearstar, you know, on the podcast, on the video. It's a Clearstar I like, right? It hasn't got, again, it hasn't got a lot of, it's not, it hasn't got IP, and I said that in the video, but it's very undervalued and it's growing. Yeah. It's getting better. It's getting bigger contracts, bigger clients. And I think the jobs market in the US, which is what they do, is going to get busy for the next 10 years, pretty much. I've seen Trump trying to pull off the election. I'm just thinking America. Trump is trying to delay the election now, saying there's too much with this virus going on, too much things going on. And
of course, yes, he's losing. He doesn't want to do it now.
He said people postal voting be the most corrupt election in the world. We got to, you know, delay this. So, you're losing, fella.
Taking his ball home. He's not happy.
Another one,
because you were saying about feedback, and they had some big institutional investors in at $5 million, raised $5 million, and the market cap was $5 million. Mm-hmm. Roslyn Data Technologies, they had what was it, 22% premium to the share price. They had a placing last month, and so I bought some of them in a few weeks ago. Not much has happened with them so far.
Roslyn Data and ClearStar, Paul Hill had brought these to my range. They're the only two companies I own in the red, but there's a seller in ClearStar. There's a fund that's drip feeding into the market over a long period, apparently. That's why they don't have, they put the sale with a broker, and because they don't know how much stock they have on a daily basis, it's a long order, they don't have to constantly update the market. But they're they should be out soon, because they had 1.5 million, or almost 7 million shares, like that, which is what Paul Hill has. So, but they'll be out. That drip feeding just completely, you know, suppresses the share price all the time. But it's obviously coming on too low, because getting to the stage where it's a ridiculous valuation. It's like 12.5 million. They turn over 18 million, and then almost break even. And they're getting better. They get bigger clients come on board, more money. They'll be sort of cash flow positive, like, next year. So, I just think they're doing very well. They're a leader in their field. Roslyn Data is the same. It's one of the slow burners. They're one of those companies you could probably hold on to. Like I said, you know, buy right now at the lows, hold on to it for years, and they'll do very well. It's one of those, you know, quiet sort of 10 bags.
Yeah.
It's boring 10 bags that happen in 10 years, and you think, they were very uneventful, but done very well, you know? So
yeah, exactly. So I bought them, nothing really happened. I sold them after a few weeks. It's like, don't do that, that's the one that turns into the 10 bagger. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, don't just buy and sell because the price has moved, you know? Don't just do that because don't make an investment decision for a non-investment reason, you know? So don't say, it's bored with it, or something else is moving. My friends
jump
are buying stock.
On
Twitter, you see someone else's stock is booming. No, don't do that. Obviously, don't be deluded. If a stock is not going well, you just got to get rid of it. If the story isn't playing out, get rid of it. But generally, you know, it's patience, isn't it? Having a bit of patience, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but well done on feedback, everyone that was on that, so... Steve and his massive research.
You did quite well on the old Gfinity buyback in, Pete, this week as well.
I don't know if it happened there, but to be fair, Steve said I put ordered a buy in at 2.8 to buy some more at. Yeah. And he flagged that up, you know, way ahead. I said, okay. And it did dip down, it filled it, and jumped back up. Which I thought, wow, how big was your order, Steve? And then... then Steve said, and Pete said, I put one in as well, just below Steve's. After the event had happened.
Yeah. Mine was at 2.7 at Field.
It's easy to say that, isn't it? You know,
very nice. That was a nice win. And then the very next day, it came back down to, 2.8 in the other
one. It's still up from what we bought.
Again, though, do you know what? We are looking at day-to-day prices, aren't we? I'm obsessed with it. And this is a company that's going to be, like I said, you know, so many times John has said... they're going to be break even end of this year and generating cash next year, pretty much. So it's the start of a long journey. You're going to have a bit of volatility, you know.
My reason for doing it is spending the profit that I took out. Well, not profit, the money I took out when I de-risked, because I want to have a bigger holding than obviously just de-risking and only having half of what I originally bought. But we'll see. I believe in the longer term potential of it.
I think that. Listen, and in fact, John Clark, the CEO, sent me a link today about it was a podcast he listened to, and I've listened to this series before. It's called Entrepreneurial Thought Leaders, it's called, and it's really worth listening to. It's a guy very clever, and he's head of a VC company, and he's backed some of the biggest companies around, from like Tesla, Google, and he goes through some of the methods. This is a live video they do at Stanford, one of the best universities, and I think he stands up in front of the guys taking the entrepreneurial sort of degree in America, and so gives them advice on, if you are in a position where your startup business is going well and you want to, you know, raise some money, then These are the kind of questions you need to have answered if you approach a VC. This is the kind of questions we ask a new company if they want money off us, you know? And they're very clever, actually, and just goes through. But it's worth, I'll send you the link. I'll put the link on Twitter, actually. But it's worth listening to the podcast. Very interesting, this guy called, what's he called? Brooks. There, Brooks. But it's worth listening to. Because he even goes over, he said, you look for companies that are going 10x, basically. And what does that mean? And he talks about gross margins. Very simple way of doing it. He talks about a cookie. So let's say you've got a cookie, okay, and you can sell it for a dollar, and it costs you 50 cents to make that dollar. You've made, your gross margin there is 50%, so you made 50 cents. And then how many cookies can you make off that profit? So I can make one. So then you've got to go and sell that again to make another one. So you're a flat line in there, pretty much. And he says, now, if I say sell the cookie but one to go somewhere else and sell it for 150, and my costs are the same, I can now make two cookies. See, and with the profit. So I'm going up. So now, if you did $2, and he said, and you cost, you know, sort of 50 again, you get 150, you make three cookies. That, he said, to do that over, if you do, you know, 3 years, pretty much a 10 bag.
Yeah.
So he said, when you're starting a business, you have to look at your margins, pretty much, and for a VC to get interested in you, that's the kind of margins you need to have. Sort of that kind of, you know, be able to 10 bag in 3 years. And it just starts off very simple like that. It's very clever, but worth looking at. But John Clark, the CEO of Gfinity Seminar, because that guy is now investing in gaming and esports. And he tells you why, because of the network effect. He said, when you get a business, when the network grows, becomes more valuable, he said, that's a very impressive model. He says, that's the kind of model we want to invest in. And he gives examples. So let's say an exact replica of Skype, and he calls it Skypeo or something, or Ravio Skype or something like that. And I say, I've got exact replica of Skype, come and join my network. He said, no one's going to join it, because Skype have people all joined there, they have a network of millions. If I join your network, just me and you, I can make one call. So he said, if someone else joins, I make two calls, but why would I go there?
Yeah.
So it's not the actual product sometimes, it's the network. When you've got a massive network, your product doesn't have to be the best there, but it's the network that's the most important. But getting that network means you have to be quite good anyway. And so he talks about that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's very impressive. But worth, I'll put the link on Twitter, but it's worth listening to the podcast. Very clever guy. And you think, wow, I'm quite ordinary company, this guy. Just obviously, that's why he's one of the most successful.
No, don't put yourself down.
No, but when you listen to guys like that, you think, wow, he's not that old.
Yeah.
And yet he's.
No, you're right. You are.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. No, but he's not
I'd
that
probably
old.
Look down on him.
Yeah, yeah, you would, Steve. He's thoughtful this before. No, but just basically he's done so much.
What's the ticker?
Yeah. Okay, at the end, the question and answer session.
Yeah,
at the end of the question and answer session. What's the ticker? What? What are you talking about? This company? I wasn't talking about a company, I just took my general VC. Oh, what a waste of time this has been. I've been here for 3 quarters now. There's no ticker at the end. Just storm out. Idiot. That's perfect. Right, Steve, on into 3 quarters now. I think we've done it, haven't we? Pretty much.
Excellent. Good
Steve,
stuff.
Because let's be honest, to Steve, to invest 3 quarters an hour just to get a ticker is, you know, to him, that's enough. I say, just get the ticker at the start, yeah?
Just tell me if I make money.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's, do you know what, that's the majority of investors, they just want to know what stock to invest in to make money, you know? I quite enjoy researching stocks and finding out a little bit of story, backstory, but like I said, most people, I suppose the difference in knowing a mechanic, and I can know if an engine works or just wanted to drive the car, isn't it, really? But I don't like the engine.
And also, but also you're fine-tuning your art, which me and Pete and Paddy are benefiting from.
Yeah. So, exactly. It's always, it's evolving, but you can still make money as you evolve, see? Mm. I mean, like I said, I'm just at an all-time high in the portfolio, not long back, but I look back now and thinking, wow, I know so much more than I did even like, you know, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, a month ago, definitely a year ago. Yeah, I know a lot more now, you know, and I've been invested for like 20 odd years pretty much. But you can still make money. It doesn't matter what stage you are in the learning curve, you can still make money.
You might as well just give up work and just go, what do you do for a living, Steve? I just buy shares.
Yeah. Justin tells me the ticker and I buy it.
That's your job.
You want to name yourself a fancy name here. I'm a ticket collector. A ticket collector? No, ticker collector.
You know what? If If from now on I can go without deadheaded and ever stock, I'll be happy.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're going to aim to get. I genuinely want to. Like, if you get a 100 bagger, for example, right? You can skim off the top and just put something in another company and then try and, you know, that's the seed. Seed fund that, and just take a bit of money off that and plant it elsewhere. And so that's the constant source of your funds, isn't it? Just take some money from the top slice a little bit here and there. Let the, you know, but in fact, it's worth reading this book because it's this guy, also a little story where he died and his wife had a portfolio. He had a portfolio, this guy, it's called the Coffee Can Principle. And his wife transferred over to this fund manager. And he looked in the bloke's portfolio, or the wife's portfolio. It was okay. He was doing a bit better than the market, pretty much. He looked in the husband's portfolio, and it's done phenomenally. And all he'd done, this guy from the brokerage, unbelievable. What he'd done is he'd bought all our buy recommendations that this brokerage had done. He didn't pay for the service though. He just read about them, but didn't sell anything. This research company, he'd obviously put a lot of research into these companies, he just bought them, didn't sell anything. And he said he had one or two ones didn't do so well. Of course, they went down about 60, 70, 80%. And these are cash-generating companies now. But he had a couple of 200,000 ones, and he had one was 800,000. He said he'd bought that for he'd done over 100 bags, just because he didn't touch it for 10 years. And so that's the thing, if you get a good company and starts generating cash, don't worry from week to week, month to month, even year to year. If you're still generating the business, still good, hold on to it.
Equally though, you can't help feeling you do that and in 10 years go and open your eyes to it and go, oh, right, there's nothing in there now.
If you're going to buy resource stocks, like I said, the chances of a resource stock getting to be producing, being a producer of some kind of commodity, is very small. It's literally under 5%.
So on that, there's two examples recently where I deadheaded, going back, a few couple of months or whatever, deadheaded, got rid, and I've taken that money, I put it into Gfinity, and I've made that money back, so I've rescued it. Both of those, Janganda Mines and Cora Gold, both have actually now recovered, and I would have recovered. If I'd just stayed in there, I'd have recovered. But anyway, I've recovered it elsewhere.
But the thing is, until they start generating cash, they'll have very volatile ups and downs. So you're not be far away from up and a down anyway. Now, it could go down way below where you want it to go. So it's just, you can hang on and let it rally and then sell out. But then you may think, then the psychology is such, though, it's almost harder to sell on a rally because you know, oh, this is it now. It's going to be
psychology.
Yeah, because so you may as well sell. And if you're going to sell something, just take it out of your watch list. If it's a company you're never going to buy again, then just take it off your watch list because there's no way looking at it again. Because if you made a decision why you've sold it, just get rid of it and focus on companies that are going to generate value. Like feedback. I know feedback will come back a little bit because they're not generating revenue yet or not enough to sustain. So I don't know what revenue they're going to have or when they're going to break even. But already we're very very early here. This is very early. So even if Pete, you've got plenty of time, it will come back a little bit because they're not generating profit, but I think it could rise again soon.
What, you said I bought too early?
You should have sold, Steve, 100%+ up.
But that's...
Well, by the time of it, I couldn't anyway.
Can I just say, the only reason I know that Janganda recovered was that Steve's still in it.
No, I sold on it. I sold.
Yeah, but you waited until it recovered. Well done, Steve.
Yeah.
And then told us, and I was like, oh, right, that's recovered, is it? All right, I got out of that. Whoops.
Anyway,
fun and games, guys. Fun and games. It's enjoyable.
Resource companies, brilliant traders, really. We're not traders. One of my things that I'm determined to do now, final word, is to try and buy some companies that I think in 10 years' time will be massive and try and hold on to them. If they double, first of all, I can take some of the half the money off, and then almost it's a risk-free trade if I want to. But that's what I want to do. I want to have a company that will 100 bag in 15, 20 years,
I'm still intrigued at what point you would take profit out, but anyway, that's a discussion for another day.
Okay, have a nice weekend, boys.
Enjoy camping.
Do you know what? You're putting a real downer now.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.